Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a train wreck in the morning. I'm a bitch in the afternoon. Every now and then without warning, I can be really mean toward you. Even in the fire, and yet you see the picture clear as day. I don't know why you lie.
Good morning, Michael. How are you this morning?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. And good morning to you, Lorraine. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
I'm great. Can you guys hear me okay?
We can hear you just fine. Uh-huh.
Okay, great. Thank you guys for tuning in to joining Motivate My Life Radio this morning. We appreciate you guys stopping in through the studio and talking with us a little bit about as I said, a really important topic, marriage. And before we get started, if you can kind of just tell me, you know, where are you guys from? And just tell me a little bit about how did you get to this place of marriage therapy and marriage counseling and sex therapy?
Well, just a little bit. Both my wife and I, we've been together for 35 years, married for 32 years. And during the course of our relationship, we've endured a lot. Right around year nine, we experienced some infidelity in our marriage, drug abuse on my part, and just a lot of the trials and everything that you can think of that was associated with that. But, you know, by the grace of God, we were able to make it through. Just a little bit more about us. We do have three adult children who has blessed us with our older daughters, bless us with our two grandchildren and our son-in-law. And, you know, through our journey, you know, we did have others that poured into our life, and we were able to make it through. And, you know, we were purposed after that, that, you know, since we had others to feed into our life, it was incumbent upon us to go ahead and, you know, try to help others to be able to make it through as well.
And I think that's so important, you know, to be able to use your story and build a platform to be able to help other individuals because they need it and they do seek help a lot of times in this particular area. And, Michael, I kind of want to just jump right in, and you or Lorraine can answer the question. As far as you talked about some of the challenges to your ninth year of marriage, and when you guys hit those roadblocks and obstacles, what was that one pivotal moment that you said, okay, this is how we're going to have to fix this. This is how we're going to move on. Like, what was the moment that you decided not to give up?
I would say after that started in year 9, and then by year 12, trying other things to just get away from each other that did not work, then we kind of figured that for us, it was not meant for us to go our separate ways. So when we went to court for our divorce, the judge said that she would not allow us to get a, she would not grant us a divorce at that time, and we needed to go to counseling. And we went to counseling, but we're not offered anything to do that we could make a change. But still we knew that everything else that we tried to get away wasn't working, so we realized that we had to find some way to stay together and do it in a healthy manner. So that's when we started to look for other options, and people were placed in our lives, spoke to us and showed us, you know, different things that we could do. And then we were very consistent in our beliefs, and we became more grounded in our beliefs, and that's one thing that helped us to stay focused on what we wanted to do, which was to stay together and have a healthy marriage and not continue to live in dysfunction.
And, you know, I want to touch on something, because you have to change your mindset for a lot of this stuff to happen, you know, change your priorities and change your mental state to get to a place.
Exactly.
Because, you know, when you got to that place of wanting to give up, there are a lot of married couples that are in that place right now. And probably we have a lot of listeners probably on the call right now that are listening into this. And that's why it's so important for me to ask, when we talk about infidelity, like, you know, I know it's a mental state of mind, you know, do you want to stay, do you want to go, and how does that work? But, you know, when you forgive, you know, I want to ask you guys this. When you forgive, you know, you say you've forgiven, how do you move past that pain? Because a lot of times with infidelity comes pain, right? So how do you get past that pain piece of it to move forward?
So definitely you have to forgive first. And what we know about forgiveness is that we have to forgive, not so much for the other person's sake, but for our own sake, so that we're not overwhelmed with the feelings of anger and pain on an ongoing basis. So when my forgiveness, because it was my husband who had the affair, my forgiveness first came with being able to understand that where he was when he committed the adultery was not in a healthy state mentally. He was not strong enough to resist the temptations, and that it was not about me. And even the offense itself was something that he often shares that he categorized. So it wasn't that he set out to hurt his wife. He just set out to fulfill his desires.
And that's one of the things too. You know, one of the things I often share is, and for anyone who engages in infidelity, it really boils down to a matter of being selfish, and self-centered, wanting what you want when you want it, and you know, not considering others, right? Because and not considering the harm that you're doing to others. And you know, you mentioned as far as getting past it. I think in order for the offender, you know, to allow the person who they transgressed against to be able to get past this, you know, they have to be accountable, right? And, you know, and a lot of times it's hard for someone who has committed an offense, you know, to, you know, fess up and be accountable for your actions and going forward, you know, taking on the responsibility of helping the person that you have offended to get past the offense. And it's not something that is, you know, easily achievable. It takes work. I mean, it takes a lot of work. You know, we few moments of indiscretion or a few days or whatever, you know, could account to be a lifetime of, you know, repairs. You know, prayerfully it doesn't go that long. But, you know, moving past it is possible, you know, provided that the individuals are, you know, doing the work.
And you know what? I totally agree with you. I think sometimes we forgive with our mouths, but we haven't forgiven with our hearts. So I think sometimes it's easy to say, I forgive you, but then you don't want to do the work to put in. Because I totally agree with you have to forgive yourself. And I think some people don't understand that. It's kind of like, well, why am I forgiving myself? And I'm not the one that basically so to speak, committed the crime. So I don't think people understand mm-hmm. where that place of peace lies when you start to forgive yourself mm-hmm. first and not even blame yourself. I mean, Lorraine, did you go through a point where you thought it was your fault at any point during the marriage?
Of course I did. I felt like, you know, what's wrong with me? Is my hair not right? Am I too overweight? Am I not cute enough? Am I not smart enough? And then I started to look around at Hillary Clinton, who was going through the same thing with her husband, and surely she was intelligent. And Halle Berry, at the same time, was dealing with some infidelity in her relationship, and of course she's a beautiful woman. And I came to realize that it's not my fault. You know, that this was his thing, his insecurities, that he needed the constant stroking, you know. And no matter how much I was doing at home, it didn't matter because he needed more wherever he could get it. And that spoke to his insecure state. And what I had to also do, since we were married, I had to accept the responsibility of being one with him and helping him to grow if I was going to stay in the relationship. Mm-hmm. So I was very consistent about, I am not going to tolerate this behavior, and I continued mm-hmm. to let him know that. I also let him know that, because when it happens, when infidelity happens, oftentimes the victim will, their whole world is shaken. And that's all they think about 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Where is he? What is he doing? I had to let all that go and realize there were other things that were more deserving of my attention. So I stopped the following him. I stopped the checking his phone. For those purposes, I had to let all that go and realize that none of that in the past had stopped him. So I just had to let him come to his own conclusion. But I did let him know that I'm not a doormat and I'm not just dealing with this. So I was able to come to a point where I could encourage him. So go ahead, babe.
And I was just going to add to that, you know, where it shifted the responsibility to me so that she wouldn't feel the need or the desire to have to follow me or anything like that is, you know, being accountable, you know, where I was, you know, extending invitations to, you know, go with me wherever I was going, whether it's just to the store or, you know, whatever it might be, you know, to, you know, afford her a level of comfortability that, you know, I'm, you know, not seeking to, you know, do anything that's, you know, going to be detrimental to my marriage. So, you know, that involved me as part of the accountability, you know, being willing to answer the 100 questions a day. And then, you know, it shifted, you know, because, you know, I was truthful in my answers. You know, the question shifted to maybe 50 a day. Then, you know, it, over a period of time, you know, it gradually dropped. It took some time, but I had to be willing, you know, to give the answers. And one of the things I always, there's a saying, I'm Jamaican born, and we have a saying, it says, speak the truth and speak it ever, cause it what it will. Those who hide the wrong you've done, you do the wrong thing still. And I believe in that, you know, you speak the truth, it's the same today as it was yesterday and it will be tomorrow. And, you know, from that, you can gradually build on that, you know, as a foundation. You don't have to worry about keeping up with whatever. You know, you speak the truth, the truth is the truth, and you go forward.
Well, I want to ask you something. Directly, Michael. When you were in that place, when you were in that mental mind state, and you were having an affair and so forth, and Lorraine spoke on something, and she said that, you know, of course she knew it wasn't about her. At some point, she had to realize it wasn't about her. It was you fulfilling your own needs and a selfish need. When men are in that state of mind, you know, do they stop and think about the what if, or does a lot of times, is it more of I'm thinking about myself, or I'm not worried about getting caught, or, you know, jeopardizing my marriage, or putting myself in a place where, you know, I can, this one action can end my marriage. Like, I sometimes, as a woman, I like to sometimes know what's going on in a male's mind when they are at that negative dark place.
Right. And let me say this, you know, and I think a lot of times, you know, when infidelity occurs in a marriage and on the man's side, most times it's not the one night stand. I generally refer to it as the slow walk, where, you know, you're having inappropriate conversations, different little comments, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's a process. And it somehow I believe that men develop in their mind and we compartmentalize that, you know, we're not going to get caught or not going to do anything, you know, excessive to jeopardize my marriage. And I think for the most mm-hmm. part, that's how a lot of men operate. Because I know, like in my case, I had no desire to ever leave my wife, no desire to ever be with another woman, but it was something that I wanted to do, you know, that selfish behavior. So, and I think it's that way for a lot of men that, you know, we enjoy being in a marital relationship. We love to have the family and the kids and, you know, just everything else, but, you know, we still want to have that, you know, that little excitement, or lack of a better term, you know, when we engage in that type of behavior.
And I have to, you know, and I ask that because, and I'm not just saying about the, you know, asking if these women don't have infidelity, and, you know, the ones that are the criminal in America. So, I mean, that works now. That can be on both ends. I was just trying to tie up, you know, kind of get an answer of how the man mind thinks. Because we know a lot of times when women, and this is just my opinion, I think sometimes when women actually they have an affair in their marriage, we are emotional. So a lot of times, you know, we'll get emotionally drawn to someone, I think, and we're a lot of times, and you can tell me whether you agree or not, Michael, do you feel like sometimes you guys can be physical and not necessarily have an emotional attached to the person?
I totally, absolutely agree. And that is why, you know, because men are definitely more physical, you know, 9 times out of 10 or maybe even more than that. Men, it's just a physical thing. And with women, it is definitely emotional. And that is why it's a lot easier for women to get past their husbands or whatever by cheating on them, you know, as opposed to men, because men know that, you know, when their significant other, you know, commits infidelity with someone else, that there was an emotional, you know, attachment, an emotional connection. And it makes it 10 times harder for men to get past it than for women. And, you know, it's just one of those things. I haven't been able to explain that one, but it's just something, you know, we experience it all the time in our counseling. It's a very difficult thing for a man to get past infidelity.
And that I do know firsthand. We have so many. I sent out a poll last week, and I knew you guys were going to be joining me on the show. And we have received probably 178 questions that folks want to know the answer to or get some insight on. And, of course, we don't have the time this morning to answer 100-something questions, but I do want to be able to answer some of the questions. And so, and a lot of the things that we just discussed is a lot of questions. I tried to get you guys to give us kind of an overview of how, you know, give people some insight, because a lot of people right now, you know, that was one of the main questions. How do you get past infidelity? How do you learn to trust someone again? You know, why do men cheat? You know, so these are some of the same questions that we get consistently over and over again when we touch on these topics. I recently had a show about 3 weeks ago, and it was the male's perspective on marriage and relationships. And I had 3 married men come on the show, including one to be my spouse, and kind of talk about their perspective on marriage. Because as you guys know, of course, we don't have the same perspective, and sometimes when it comes to marriage. But because you guys have experienced so much throughout your marriage, and you know, you've used your now personal triumphs to help other marriages and other couples, I want to ask, I have a particular question I want to ask before we take some of the questions, some of the email questions, as far as when you get to a place of when you don't trust someone. I think that's a mental state too. Michael, you touched on something when you said relationships, sometimes infidelity starts way before you actually have intimacy, phone conversations, text messages. Now we live in a social media world. It's so easy to contact folks now. You don't even have to look for their number. You can just go out there on social media and find them. And so I want you to kind of, either one of you can chime in and let me know what you think, because this was a really probably 40% of a question asked. Is that considered cheating? Is that considered cheating when you have side conversations with someone of the opposite sex that your spouse or your mate has no clue about? You are flirting with folks out there on the social media world. You're going on, you know, maybe lunch dates with individuals, and you're saying that you guys are platonic friends. So those type of connections, do you consider that, is that considered cheating in a marriage?
And so we definitely have to define cheating, first of all. And cheating in a marriage is when you do anything that your mate has no idea about, when you're being deceptive. Mm-hmm. So, yes, that is cheating. And when you are intentionally hiding things and not sharing those with your mate, of course, you're not going to be together 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but those should be open conversations. So if I'm on social media and I just met some guy, that if I can't come to my husband and tell him I met this guy on social media, then I should not be doing it, because it is deception and it is cheating. And that's why one thing a lot of premarital couples don't understand when we share with them, that it is not a positive thing to hold on to relationships of the opposite, with the opposite sex, when you go into a marriage. And oftentimes they'll push back. They'll say, well, you know, I had this friend ever since I was in elementary school.
Yes.
If you're going to bring that friend in, you know, as part of your couple's group, maybe you hang out with him and his wife or her and her husband, then okay, if the four of you can get along well, then that's a good thing. But if it's just him, you two are having conversations, perhaps you call him sometimes to find out what could your husband be thinking, then you're out of order. It is cheating.
Right, because, you know, it's that's definitely one of those areas that we totally speak against, you know, because even the most innocent intention at times, you know, could lead to some destructive behaviors. You know, you're not going into it, you know, with the mindset that, you know, I'm going to do something inappropriate, but oftentimes it leads to something that's inappropriate.
And totally agree with you guys on that. That's why you have to be careful. I want to get this question out because I want to make sure I don't miss this question before we wrap the show up. If there's an issue with porn, you know, in relationships and in marriage, and so is porn considered a form of cheating as well? If you're watching porn and you're engaged in porn, is that considered a form of cheating?
Yes, it is. And we share with couples, it is, because when you're watching that, you are taking those things into your mind.
And
I
consider that taking pictures.
You're taking those pictures, and then when you're making love with your spouse, who are you thinking about? You're thinking about the porn that you saw versus your mate. And that climax experience should be one that you only experience with your mate. They should be the one who has the opportunity to bring you to that point of ecstasy, not a picture or a video.
Yeah, because, you know, 9 times out of 10, if you're watching porn, and especially, you know, out of the your mate's presence, there's some masturbation that's taking place, and you're taking away from the relationship.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to chime in on that, guys, because there's been some debate and conversation regarding that, and I just wanted to get you guys' insight on that, because some guys don't think watching porn is, you know, that's not a form of cheating, and I totally agree with what you guys are saying, because you're kind of having you're fantasizing about women that you're seeing on the porn site, and then you're going to engage in sexual activity with your spouse. And, yeah, who are you thinking about? But this has come up before where someone would tell me they're watching porn so they can get ready for their spouse. So what do you guys think about that? Like, they're using porn to get themselves ready for the sexual intimacy they're going to have with their spouse.
So why not work with your mate so that they can help you get to that point? If there are different things you need to do sexually or need to help them do for you, then why not teach them so that they can fulfill that space, which is theirs anyway. you know. And that's one thing. We have to become very comfortable when it comes to making love and having sex, which are definitely two different things. Sex is recreational. Making love is more intimate. And both of those are necessary in a marital relationship. But you are to share with your mate, teach your mate what it is that turns you on, what gets you aroused. And it should not be pornography. If you can look at a video or a picture and it does it for you, your mate should be able to reach that same space and help you to get ready for having sex.
So, you know,
and thank you. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Michael.
No, I was just going to say also that, you know, if some preparation is needed, right, there's probably something going on psychologically. Maybe your mate is not turning you on or, you know, something like that. And something like that, you know, does require a conversation, right? And, you know, I believe that that's unfair on either side. If you're not allowing your mate, someone who you're sharing your soul with, right, you're being intimate with, if they're not allowed to be able to, you know, have the full realm and the full scope of that area of your life, you know, you're denying them, right? And I believe it's so much more fulfilling when you can actively engage, you know, with someone, you know, to and open up to all the different areas, you know, of you, your sexual being.
I totally agree with that, Michael, and thank you for clarifying that, because I think that is a question that comes up a lot. It has been a question that was asked a lot in our poll about pornography and how men feel, a lot of men, you know, women emailed in and said that their husbands does not feel that that is a form of cheating. But a few of the folks that emailed in also indicated that, you know, their husband's watching porn and they're not even knowing about their husband watching porn. So they're finding out about it. They go on his laptop or his cell phone and it so happens to pop up. And then that's how they're finding out. So in my eyes, that is a form of being deceitful. Far as the porn is concerned. But I want to talk about something else that I think is really huge in a huge ingredient in a healthy marriage, and that's finances. So I just want to switch the gear really quickly to talk about finance, because that was another question that came up as far as the money is concerned, okay? You know, if you hide money, if you're hiding money in your relationship from your spouse, your significant other, your mate, your whomever, is that considered a form of being deceitful?
If you're hiding it, you're not being completely open and honest. And when we get married, we marry because of, you know, regardless of what your belief is, the foundation of marriage comes from the Christian belief that the man and woman should become one flesh. So if you're one flesh, then you should know exactly what your mate is doing, and your mate should be privy to everything that you do. So, yes, hiding money is something that goes against becoming one flesh, and it should not be something that's done in a marriage.
And the reality is that, you know, if there is a need to hide money, hide the things that you do financially from your mate, there's something missing in that relationship. And, you know, I don't believe that that's a good foundation for marriage or even getting married. If you can't trust someone regarding your finances, there's an issue there.
Okay, and that's all my lady listeners that's in tune into the show. So no more hiding those side bank accounts that you have.
Right. And you know that's what most of us were taught, that we should always have a little stash on the side.
The little just in case fund.
Yeah. And we set ourselves up for failure when we do that.
I totally agree, but and Lorraine, I have to kind of comment with you on that, Lorraine. We were brought up like that. Hey, you know, I know my mom used to tell me, yeah, you always keep a nest egg. You know what I mean? So even, you know, before I got married, in my mind, I keep a nest egg, and my nest egg is supposed to be my nest egg.
Right.
It's a lot to learn when you do transition over from being in a relationship into being married, because it's totally different. And so that brings up the next topic. Do you think a lot of marriages survive when the woman is the breadwinner? Because we have a lot of, there's a lot of women out here, they're all the breadwinners in their family, in their marriages. And it, I've known folks to tell me that it causes problems in their marriage. And I just didn't understand if the woman, whoever, as long as those bills are getting paid and the home is getting taken care of, mm-hmm. and there's respect still in the home, and why would it be a issue if the woman makes more money than the man?
Yeah. And the thing is that we miss the point that we're supposed to be one. So if the check comes in the house, it belongs to both of you. It's not just the woman. The man has just as much responsibility to be a good steward over that money. So even if the check is not in his name, he should know how to save it, how to invest it, how to distribute it, how to handle the debt that they have. He should have a great role in how that money is distributed and saved. So just because it's in the woman's name does not mean it's just hers and she takes it and tells him what to do or that she makes more. All the money that comes into the household, if you want to be successful in your marriage and not feel at times that you two are not on the same page, then you don't want to separate your finances. You want to bring it together. And our recommendation is often that you bring your money in, you put it in one account, then you both sit down and have a budget meeting regularly and determine where that money is going.
You know, just going to add to that, you know, because definitely what affects one affects both. It affects the entire household. And, you know, especially in these days and times, you know, we have situations where, you know, the woman is the breadwinner. The man stays at home for different reasons. But like my wife was saying, is that because of the role that the man was established, and I'm just going to kind of go a little bit biblical here. When God established Adam in the garden, right, he established him. You know, he was given charge, right? So even if he is in a non-working situation, you know, outside the home, you know, he still does have that responsibility of making sure that everything is intact financially at home.
And that's a very, I think that's a very strong point. Far as particularly when that money comes in, it does not matter whose name the money in, whose name the money is in, the money belongs to the household. And I think a lot of folks may need to change their mindset and their view on that, because I think now we're living in these marriage days now where this is mine and this is his, and this is, because I still hear it a lot with married couples, opposed to the ours and we, and because it doesn't matter, vice versa, if it's the woman that's at home and the man is, you know, we're the one bringing in the check. He's still bringing in the check for you, for the both of you guys, and it's for the household.
Exactly.
So that's a really strong point, and I hope a lot of the listeners are getting that point, because there is no your money. There are a lot of married couples. I want to ask you guys what you think about this. There's a lot of married couples that don't have joint bank accounts. Some married couples just don't have joint bank accounts. They have separate bank accounts. So what do you guys feel about, you know, married couples having joint accounts versus separate accounts?
And some married couples have, like the husband might have an account with his mother, you know, or the wife may have an account with her mother. So there's a lot of separation and division when it comes to finances in the relationship. But we definitely discourage it.
Right, you know, we encourage that you do everything jointly, you know, and, you know, we do want to make sure that, you know, we're putting in the community pot and we distribute from there, you know, that we each have allowances, you know, because we know that, you know, there are times where you might want to surprise your mate and do something or plan a vacation. You want to save and do something special for the family, and you should be afforded the liberty to be able to do that, you know. Where, you know, you can have a savings account that you're both aware of, not that you're going to be checking on it, seeing how much your mate has and all that type of stuff, but that, you know, you do have an allowance and that you do go from there. But everything that you have, you know, you're each aware of.
And thank you for, again, kind of giving us your insight on that, because I think it's really important. I have two questions that are like in the red over here. So we're going to see if we can get these answered really quickly. So these are like exclamation mark questions. So let's see. We have Tony. She lives in Boston, Massachusetts. And Tony wants to know, her husband recently had an affair with a woman, and there was a child conceived out of the affair. She has tried forgiving her husband, not working, because she can't release the pain that it has caused. It has now been 10 months, and it feels like it was just yesterday when the child, when I found out about the child. How do I get past this pain and try to stay in my marriage?
So the first thing you have to determine whether or not you want to stay in the marriage. So anytime we set out on a journey, we have to determine where we're going. So if you make up your mind that you want to stay in the marriage, then everything you do should be in line with you getting to that destination. You can't one day feel like I'm going to get out, the next day I'm going to stay, the next day, okay, I'm going to separate. No, you have to be committed to whatever it is you determine you're going to do. So, and if you decide you're going to stay in the marriage, then you have to encourage your husband to turn over a new leaf, to show you he is trustworthy, okay? So that means there are going to be some things that he's doing differently. If you don't see any progress, you don't see anything differently, if he's normally coming home 2 hours late, 3 hours late, and he continues to do that, then you shouldn't trust him because he hasn't done anything differently. But if you're going to trust him, you continue to let him know this is not what I'm going to tolerate. You have to continue to let him know and may even give him a time period. But make sure it's a time that you're going to be ready to move if you do not see progress. So normally about a good 3 month consistency of changed behavior that's more conducive to your relationship. So once you decide where you want to go, you want to stay married or divorce. If you're going to divorce, go ahead, do it as soon as possible. If you're going to stay married, understand that there's going to be a lot of work. There are going to be some good days and some bad days, more bad than good. But you have to learn how to manage your mind. You have to learn how to redirect your thoughts. When you start thinking about how could he have another child, you have to then train yourself to say, this child didn't have a say in this situation. So I'm not going to hold any animosity towards this child. My husband is the offender. There's little animosity against the woman because your husband is the one who made that situation possible. So you have to forgive him based on the fact that you're not going to allow that pain to overwhelm you continually, and you're going to hold your husband accountable for making changes. And those changes should be a continued progression that you can see. And the more you see the changes, the more you can trust him. And time does play a big part in that.
Yeah, and really just the willingness to change, you know, on his side. That will speak volumes, you know, in the
right
situation.
And Tony, I hope that kind of helped with your question. You know, Michael and Lorraine had some very valid points as far as if you're going to try to stay with that person. But, you know, as women, because we're so emotional, I think we want to forgive a lot of times, but we sometimes don't know how to forgive. We want to forgive, but it's like a process. We want to hold this stuff for 2, 3, 4 years and bring it up when it's convenient, when he does something you don't like. You know, we are all guilty of that because of how we hold our pain. But I think sometimes, too, you need to find out, you know, does the husband want the marriage, right? Because you may be trying to hold on to a marriage that you can't hold on to it by yourself. So
I
think that
and it's more than what's spoken. This is where our intuition comes into play. Women have intuition like we have private parts that men don't have. Most women have intuition and we don't trust it. So when I said that I wanted to get a divorce, there were days when my husband said he wanted to. He even signed the divorce papers twice and he didn't want a divorce. So it's not so much of what we say, but it's our actions. You know, and then when it comes to forgiveness, we have to understand what forgiveness is. Forgiveness is not saying to the person, it's okay what you did. What it's saying is, I'm not going to allow that to continue to cause me pain.
And keep me in bondage.
Exactly. And I expect you not to do that again. It does not give you permission to continue to hurt me, and it doesn't say what you did was okay.
Totally. And I totally agree with you, because sometimes you have to, well, not sometimes, you need to set mm-hmm. boundaries, because you got to have some boundaries in,
yes.
in a marriage. And I think,
mm-hmm.
you know, you agree, Lorraine, I think a lot of times we don't have
yes.
boundaries in our marriage.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because a lot of women go into marriages, and we do a lot of premarital counseling and marriage counseling. And by the way, we do it in our office in Stone Mountain, and we do it via Skype or FaceTime. So if any of your listeners want to check us out at arelationshipministry.com, we can meet with them via Skype or FaceTime. But when it comes to boundaries, we definitely need to set boundaries in our relationship. A lot of times women, you know, will go into marriage and they don't want to offend their husband. They don't want to push too hard because he may get upset and leave, or we don't want to, you know, seem like that mad black woman, or we don't want to be the typical stereotypical woman. So we're going to be free. You know, he can have his friends. Mm. He can have his female friends. You know, he doesn't have to hold the door for me. He, you know, all those things sound really cute, but, you know, about year 5, 6, you know, the resentment builds up, and it's like, you never hold the door for me. You always talk to this female, you know. So we just need to learn how to be real with ourselves up front and understand what you want in a relationship is possible. You just have to be willing to do the work to get it. Most men are not nurturers. They don't know how to love us. So if we say, that's okay, I'll accept whatever you give, I just love you, then they're not going to grow. But we need to let them know, I need you to hold the door for me, or I need you to be my protector, my provider, my pursuer, and my priest. This is what I expect from you.
Wow.
You know, when we let them know what we need, then they can work towards it.
And you need
but
to set that tone.
Like, okay.
And that tone needs to be set kind of initially. That goes, I think, that comes a little bit too with that premarital counseling, don't you think, far as
exactly.
setting, you can't, because a lot of times just say you've already been in this marriage now for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and now he's never opened the door for you or held the door for you, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're like, okay, mm-hmm. I need you to hold the door for me. I need you, because
right.
now you want him to go change, you know, change mm-hmm. something that he's been doing for the last 6 years. You want him to go change that
exactly.
overnight.
Exactly. Exactly.
So
definitely.
Setting
the
realistic boundaries. Right.
And, you know, that's kind of like changing the rules. Now, I was just going to say, it's kind of like changing the rules in the middle of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was acceptable before is no longer acceptable, and you expect someone to change at that point, you know, when they've kind of, you know, established, you know, certain behaviors. It does make it a little bit harder at that point.
I mean, because it's just like folks that may allow their spouses to stay out overnight, or they may not allow it, so let
mm-hmm.
me not say allow it. But their spouses
mm-hmm.
don't come home at night, and
mm-hmm.
there's nothing done about it. So there's no action to, there's no reaction
mm-hmm.
to the action, or there's no consequence to the
mm-hmm.
action. So then he goes
mm-hmm.
and he does it again, and then he goes
mm-hmm.
and he does it again. So it's like something like that. How do you? And this is a question for me. It how would you, if your husband is staying out all night, and how would you change that boundary? If that's something, is that something
mm-hmm.
you change up front? Like when it first happened, I mean, but outside
mm-hmm.
of just telling him you're not going to tolerate it, like what
mm-hmm.
else would be done with something of that magnitude if that were the case?
I think my wife would probably say paper or plastic.
Because you're getting ready to go. Which would you like? Now, he's saying that because when we went through our trials, that was one of the things that we laugh about now, that I would, you know, tell him, you'd leave in here. You want paper or plastic to put your things in, you know. But the boundaries that we set early on are going to be very important, because when you meet a person, you're willing to change at that point. So you have to be true to yourself as to what you want. And don't be afraid to let a person know, this is what I want in a relationship, you know. And if you can supply it, then great. If you don't think you can, maybe we can work on it. If you're not even willing to try, then maybe we need to find some other you know, maybe we need to rethink this relationship. But it's nothing wrong with letting your mate know up front what it is that you enjoy. And it's not so much a requirement that you're locked into, but these are the things that I like. Do you think you would be willing to try to provide me with these things? You know, and then you hear their list of things as well. So it's definitely important that we get those things up front. And we have to first, that's where we have to do a lot of self-reflection. Because a lot of times people go into marriages and they don't even know what they want themselves. So how in the world are they going to be able to communicate that to someone else?
And thank you for that, Lorraine. I totally agree. And you spoke on something a minute ago. You said communicate. And we didn't get to touch on communication, which is another important ingredient in a marriage where a lot of folks fall short. And I have to say this, Michael, this is no offense to men, but you guys' communication is not the same. I think sometimes we are over-communicators. Women are over-communicators a lot of times. And then sometimes you guys don't communicate at all. So it's almost like you have to figure out what you're thinking. I know there are in some incidents, and this is not every marriage, of course. We're just talking generically, you know, even with my own marriage, you know, my husband is not a big communicator. So, you know, it may be something that I've done for 3 months that he didn't like, and I may not know until it comes out in, you know, maybe an argument or a derogatory manner or, you know, and I didn't know that, you know, because I'm big on fixing, trying to fix stuff. So I feel that if you have an issue or you didn't like something, you know, I think you should talk about it. You should sit down and you should talk about it. And not even in an offensive manner. Talk about it before it escalates to another level. I think you should try to do that. Now, what is
and
the
let me say something.
Language? Sure, go ahead, Lorraine.
Let me say, what one thing that would be important for us to understand is that most men, their makeup is to be the warrior, the protector. So if I am a warrior, a protector, I'm not just giving out information, okay? I'm going to be kind of quiet because I don't want you to overtake my household or my territory. So I can't just put all the information out there, okay? Men listen well. They do. They can be watching a TV and say something, you know, you ask them something and they don't respond, but then you say, you're not listening to me, and they'll repeat exactly what you said. But that's because of their makeup. They are warriors. They don't talk a lot. And women, you said men don't talk. Women talk too much, you know. We like to go on and on. And I say it all the time, Teresa. You and I can talk. I can say, you know what? I went to the store today and bought me some black boots. And you know what? I love those boots because they have a 3-inch heel. I bought some pumps the other day. They have a 6-inch heel. And I got those at Macy's. Have you been down to Lenox lately? Did you know they have a Cheesecake Factory there? And you and I are right on point in that conversation. But the male, he's stuck at the boots. Okay, what kind of boots? You know, and so we as women, when we're communicating to our husbands or our mates, we have to learn how to be concise. We talk about the boot. The boot was black. It was a 3-inch heel. What do you think about that, babe? Leave it right there. Let him respond to that first before we get downtown at Lenox, you know? So we have to both learn how to communicate.
And that's because, you know, men, you know, because we compartmentalize, you know, and the way that we communicate, you know, we like to, you know, pursue one issue, deal with that issue, and then move on. But when you start tacking other stuff on there, you know, it gets a little bit much for most men. And, you know, with women, the contrary with the female communication is where most women, you know, communicate to build relationships, where men, we communicate to try to fix problems, take care of issues.
I totally agree with that. I'm really sitting here laughing to myself on the part where you, Lorraine mentioned that, you know, we're talking and asking a question about the shoe and the heel, and then we're all the way down the street at Lenox Mall because that's how women are. We're jumped to the next thing so quick. And you guys are still processing, you know, that first initial conversation that we had. So you haven't even gotten to the fourth or fifth thing that we're talking about. Because my husband does it to me all the time, and it's so funny. He's like, all right, give me a minute to process this first. You know, I done went on to the next question. So, I try to learn, you know, to try to slow the process down.
Right.
But again, I still, you know, there's an issue in a marriage. Like I have an email question right now where she said that her husband is not a communicator. So he does, when her husband has an issue in the marriage, he does not communicate it. He doesn't let her know what's wrong, but he will act out and have misplaced anger in other areas of their marriage because of his lack of not wanting to let her know what's going on internally with him or her, his issue. So why do men not, if you have a problem with your wife or your mate, or what is it with men that they don't feel like, hey, I know that they're not a creature by habit. I understand that. But why can't they sit their mate down and say, hey, can I talk to you for a second? You know, last week you did ABC, and, you know, if you don't mind, can you, you know, of course watch your deliverance, but why is it that men don't communicate, like, in that capacity?
But, you know, because, you know, like my wife is saying that, you know, we generally, you know, we typically fight or flee. Most men, because we don't, because if this is a person I say that I love, we typically don't want to fight. But we allow stuff to fester and to grow, and it does get to the point where it is a fight. So it's kind of like, you know, a contradictory behavior, right? You know, we're desiring one outcome, but our actions are, you know, saying something else. But the question also becomes, you know, is the environment set, you know, for the husband, you know, to be able to engage in that conversation, you know, is there that connection that's taking place? Does he feel that he can, you know, bring this to the table? Or does it typically happen when something comes up, when he brings up a subject, you know, is there some type of pushback or, you know, something along that line? So, again, you know, is the environment conducive to, you know, a conversation?
So, in other words, when your husband first gets walking the door from work, you might not want to be bum rushing him with, you know, your thoughts and how you feel about something, and kind of set the tone. Is that basically what you're saying, Michael?
Right. Definitely so. There's a proverb that talks about a word aptly spoken or like apples of gold in settings of silver. You know, we definitely do have to, you know, consider the timing. And that's what everything, you know, especially after a long day of work, you know, for a husband or even for a wife, or, you know, with children, you know, and this could be on either side as well. You know, after dealing with these type things or situations, you know, it would be, it would not be a good time, you know, for either one to be able to, you know, engage in a deep conversation. You know, that's generally the time for a cliche type, you know, deal, you know, how's your day, so on and so forth. And then, you know, once you've allowed enough time to be able to decompress, you know, and you're setting the environment that, you know, you can start to have conversations that go a little bit more than surface or superficial.
Okay.
And
now,
check with your mate. Ask your mate, you know, when is a good time for us to have a conversation? And that way they've already made the commitment. They can get
Well, Lorraine, mine will probably say never. I'm sorry. I said mine will probably
really?
Say never, Lorraine.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
It's never going to be a good time to have a conversation. No.
Right. That's not an acceptable answer. But one of the things that in communication, the most important lesson comes from St. Francis of Assisi that says, seek first to understand, then seek to be understood. So in reality, if your husband would say never, then you have to do some work and figure out why would he say that? You know, was communication a sore spot in his home with his family? You know, why is he in that position right now? And then once you understand it, you can use that information to help him to come to where you are at your place of understanding. So seek first to understand, then seek to be understood.
And I totally agree with that. And jokingly I was, but not really jokingly, because I think a lot of times, men sometimes when you start to say, hey, can I talk to you about something, immediately they may go in defense mode because they already hear in their mind, okay, she's about to attack me about something. You know what I mean? I had to be careful with the trash.
So then, Teresa,
you know, like,
how?
Go ahead, Lorraine.
I said, then how do you make that a comfortable situation for him? You know, how do you make it an enticing situation that he wants to be a part of. So you show him what the buy-in is or what it is for him. So, you know, communication is work. So when I wanted my husband to hear me, that I wanted him to stop cheating and I was serious about it, his buy-in was the fact that I knew he was a better man inside. I knew his mother and his father and what they thought of him meant a lot to him. So I used that information to bring him to a place of where he could understand the whole picture of what he was doing. I would say to him, look at your mother, how proud she is of you. If she knew you were doing these things, what would that do to her? And it was reality. It wasn't a con game. It was something he had not given much thought to. He surely had thought about it, but I used it to keep it in the forefront of his mind.
So you,
so how do you get your husband?
So basically, I think what you're saying, you find how can you get him to, I guess, kind of buy in, like what's in it for him, so to speak.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And in that situation for my husband, what was in it for him was to be the man his mother viewed him to be and his father expected him to be. That was very important for him. So that was one of the things that helped my husband make the changes.
Okay. So I just, and then I think, and then how about deliverance? I think deliverance has a lot to do with it too. Would you say, would you guys agree with that?
Oh, yes, definitely. Because I could tell my husband, you need to go empty the trash. Today is Monday, don't you know it? And he'd be like, you go empty it. Your hands work, you know. Or I can go to him and rub his back and say, baby, would you please get the trash when you go outside next? You know, and he'll like, oh, yeah, I get it. So the delivery is very important.
I'm laughing because that is so true. And I think women, you know, that are listening in on the show today, I know a lot of us are guilty of that, kind of talking at your spouse and not talking to your spouse. I think we all are kind of guilty of that. And maybe not, you know, intentionally, but kind of that's how it comes out. But guys, I thank you so much for all you guys' insight today on marriage and some of the great topics that we discussed on having a healthy marriage. I know that my listeners would like for us to sit on the phone for the next 2 hours, but unfortunately, we are going to have to wrap the show up. But what I would like to do, and I would get in contact with your PR team, is have you guys come back on the show, at least try to come back and visit on the show maybe once a month, because I think it's really helpful for folks to kind of hear a lot of this information that are either married, going through something in their marriage, or they're about to be married.
Exactly.
And I want you, before I wrap the show up, I do want to ask one more question. I think it's really important.
Sure.
What do you guys feel about premarital counseling? Because I hear a lot of folks say, well, you know, we don't need to go to premarital counseling. I hear a lot of people say that they don't think it's necessary, or I've even heard individuals went to premarital counseling and they may have kind of figured out that they shouldn't even get married, you know, right now anyway, and they do it regardless. So what do you guys think about premarital counseling? How important is that?
It is definitely important. And, of course, it's not going to help you to have the perfect marriage because that doesn't exist. But what we do in premarital counseling with couples is we give you some things to think about. We lead you in determining go-to tools when conflict arises. So we definitely encourage couples to do premarital counseling. We do it in our office. Like I said, they can contact us at arelationshipministry.com. And we also do the marriage counseling. So we have couples we work with for 15 years. We believe that premarital counseling is very important and preventative maintenance in your marriage is very important. And, of course, situational counseling is necessary too. We often need mediators in our relationship, and they can reach us at arelationshipministry.com.
And let me just kind of add a little bit here. you know, one of the things I believe, especially with the premarital, you know, it's important because, you know, when we're in a relationship and things are going well and, you know, we have this rosy picture of, you know, going into a marriage and not really thinking about the possibilities, you know, of the things that could happen. And, you know, we get in a relationship and life happens and, you know, we're just totally bewildered, you know, as to, you know, how do we move forward? How do we, you know, get through this thing? And I believe that when you get a premarital, it, you know, it kind of, you know, hopefully puts you in the proper mindset and the perspective of, you know, life is going to happen. You know, we will face challenges, but how do we navigate through them? So I think it's important for all couples, you know, to do premarital. And
so
one of the things, with my wife and I, you know, we do our sessions, you know, together, you know, so that the couples can get a male and a female perspective. Yeah. Hello?
I'm here, Michael.
Yeah. No.
Okay.
Yeah, so we definitely believe that's important.
Yeah, I mean, you know what, Michael just said something I think is important too, because my husband and I, when we were going to go to, when we went to counseling, you know, he always used to be like, well, I want a male therapist. And I'm kind of open to, you know, I was open to it. It didn't even matter. I just want somebody to help us, give us some tools and resources, how we can move forward. You know what I mean? So it didn't matter to me whether it was a, but in his mind, I think he thinks this whole tribe of women thing. We go to a female therapist. Yeah, you know what I mean? If we go to a female therapist, then she's going to side with the woman because she's a woman. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I like the idea that you guys do it together, because then you get to get the male and the female perspective, which is very, very important when it comes to. And, of course, we know other counselors, we hope they're being biased, of course, so they don't know either party most of the time. But I think it's really good for some guys to go and have the male therapist and the male counselor and the male that they can relate to some of the things that they're dealing with and they're going through and all of that. So I think that's really key. If you guys, because I definitely want to talk on, and hopefully I can get you guys back really soon, because I didn't get to cover the spirituality of marriage, because I'm spiritually based. You know, God is, you know, this is not an offense for anyone, but, you know, I keep God in the foundation of my marriage. It's like the core, you know, for us to try to, you know, have a positive marriage. But there are a lot of couples out here that don't even pray together. I wanted to touch on that because I think that is really important.
Yeah, it is definitely
To be spiritually led, you know what I mean? So what do you guys, what do you guys think about that really quickly?
Well, the spirituality, we believe, is absolutely critical. It is a must, and that's one of the things that we, you know, are the first things that we impart to our couples, that, you know, praying together is important, and the spirituality is key.
Okay. Yeah, I totally agree. Well, guys, if you can kind of, what I wanted to do before I wrap the show up is for you guys to give us your, if you have any social media handles, how folks can reach out to you, if they need to reach out to you, if you guys can give us that information now.
Definitely. We, as I shared, we're in downtown Stone Mountain, and we can be reached either, we can schedule sessions either in our office or we do them via Skype, FaceTime, or Facebook Messenger. And we have clients throughout the United States and also in other countries as well. Then you can reach us at our website, arelationshipministry.com, or on our email address, arelationshipministry@gmail.com. Let's see. We're on Instagram, arelationshipministry. So we're out there. Just remember, arelationshipministry.
All right. Well, thank you. So, Michael and Lorraine, I really want to thank you this morning. This has been a great show, some real reality topic and conversation that we had this morning. And, again, I will definitely reach out to your PR team to see if we can have you guys come back on the show. Unfortunately, again, we did have 100-plus questions, and We just don't have the capacity. So hopefully, guys, mm-hmm. if you have some questions, reach out directly to Michael and Lorraine, and, you know, maybe you become a client.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they offer virtual services as well, so you don't have
mm-hmm.
to be actually in the Atlanta area, guys. So, you know, you can get
right.
those questions answered, individually. If that's what
mm-hmm.
you guys are seeking as far as counseling is concerned, it sounds like you mm-hmm. guys are a powerful team. Guys, so be sure to reach out to them on the platforms that they have provided.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Again,
thank you
so much,
Teresa.
No,
it's
thank you. It's been a pleasure. It has been. You guys don't even realize you gave me therapy this morning.
I'm
walking away from my show with some tips. So thank you guys. Okay, so,
and we definitely would love to come back.
Yes, we must. So you guys have a good, great rest of the week. Again, I appreciate you guys joining Motivate My Life Radio, and we'll talk again soon. Guys, Michael and Lorraine Forster, they are marriage counselors, relationship therapists, and sex therapists, guys, which is key ingredients to keeping a healthy marriage. Thank all of you again for tuning in to Motivate My Life Radio. I'm your girl, Teresa Murphy, and you guys have a great rest of the week on purpose.
Keep up. Players only. Come on, put your pinky rings up to the moon.